before we deteriorate any further. We've gone down as low as we could go.
We did deteriorate.
Oh. Oh, my Lord, I think we're getting goofy after one. What are we going to do after three? Have to put us in straitjackets.
Oh, I thought you said you meant 1 p.m. I was going to say it's only 11.
Okay. I have to sneeze. Do you need a tissue?
Maybe, if I'm going to sneeze.
I think
that would be handy.
Thank you.
Of course, by now, right. I'm over it.
Just keep it.
You know how that goes.
I'm next to you.
How are you? Hand my good little phone. I brought my own. Bring your own water.
Welcome, Susan.
Hello.
Hello.
Nice to see you,
nice
sir.
You.
We're going to do the. Hello,
nice to see you. Well,
ooh,
I have.
Cool hands.
Yeah, sorry, I've been holding my bottle of water. So. It's a little chilly. I know I have six. I give someone two.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you. Nice to see
yes.
you. Nice to see you, Jennifer.
Nice to
how
see
are you?
You.
Good. Let me get the other one.
So we have a big yes. long one here. What's going to say?
Oh, you can see. Brevity is the key to success.
Key to old age, actually. Okay, Miss Susan.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And we would like you to open the series of questions with a statement of your own in 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay.
Give us an overview of you and your ideas.
Sounds great. I'm going to try to fill you in on some of the gaps. I know you know a lot about what I've been doing at KUA, you know a lot about the results, but you don't necessarily know the approach that I've taken, which I will give you some insight into my leadership style. So that's where we're going to start. So first of all, I believe that this position needs to be a very dynamic leadership position. You have a lot of people underneath you that know all the technical and the different aspects of the company, but the leadership is the key for me. So I wanted to share, I've led at the supervisory management level for over 14 years and at the executive level for over 15. I would describe my style as empowering, probably visionary. I work with my employees to come up with clear objectives and goals. And then my job is to make sure that they have all the tools they need to be successful. So that's what I see my role as. I'm a leader, I'm a mentor, I'm a coach, I'm the first one to challenge them, and I'm the first one to recognize them when they achieve something. So that's what I see my role as. So to make that happen, I'm a firm believer in employee development. I believe in very clear communication, sharing information timely, so that they have, it's part of the tools, is knowing what I know. And when you do that, they will take care of the customers and the business, which is the ultimate goal of all of this. I've demonstrated this, that I've established and led teams that are very focused and they've achieved goals. I've achieved goals in every position that I've been in. One subordinate recently wrote on my supervisory performance assessment that Susan truly understands my job and all process within the utility. Her work ethic, knowledge, and experience is inspiring. So that's a little bit about my leadership background and my approach. So a little bit about my experience. You saw on my resume, I was a teacher. Teaching never ends. The students just change. So that helps with the leadership. I've worked inside and outside of the electric utility business, so I've worked at a financial consulting firm. I ran their operations there. I've worked in retail management. I've worked at very small entrepreneurial type environments all the way to large national accounts. So as far as the perspective of the customer, I've worked at all of those types of businesses. I spent 18 and a half years at an investor-owned utility, and there, my final position, I had 7 direct reports and 131 indirect reports. I was responsible for a $73 million budget, so that was the scope of what I ended up with there. And then obviously public power for the last almost 11 years. I'm just shy of 11 years. So I've led customer service teams, energy conservation teams, key account teams, technical teams, financial teams, sales teams, and retail teams. So I think the diversity of that background brings a lot to KUA. It's not all electric utility experience. I've dealt with numerous personnel issues over the years. I've made presentations at conferences, I've facilitated groups, and I've designed and implemented new organizations from scratch. I've experienced a lot of restructurings all the way to our company being acquired and having to redesign the whole thing. So that kind of gives you a little background on my experience. So we were asked to talk a little bit about some challenges, and since you are aware of the results of some of these challenges, I'm going to get more into the approach that I took. This one continues. As you know, TOHO was leaving KUA and no longer needed our service in the field or on the phones or servicing their customers or doing their billing. The impact was pretty much all to my department. And so with that, along with AMI coming, the impact is mainly to my department again. So transitioning the employees and transitioning the team through these large changes where the workload is changing and technology is changing, you know, that was obviously it was a big challenge, but it also provided a lot of great opportunities to do some really neat things. My approach has been very, very simple, and that's very clear communication. So for years, I've met with the impacted employees, and I've told them everything that I know. And at one point in time, an employee asked me, well, what are your plans for us? And I said, well, I don't have plans for you except to support your plans. So you need to go and look around, and you need to figure out what you would like to do next, what's next for you, and I will do everything I can to help you get there. That's my plan. We offered job shadowing opportunities. I had one employee go to energy conservation training and hated it and realized that that's not what they want to do. We increased our budget for training, and my goal was to give them the tools to make sure that they were qualified or strong candidates when opportunities presented themselves. There were no guarantees, but I wanted to be sure that we were doing everything we could. So to date, since 2012, we've reduced customer service from 24.5 full-time equivalents all through attrition. That's not including E&O or the meter shop recently moving to E&O. Now, full-time equivalents are not bodies because a lot of these were part-time positions, so it's even more than that. We've also added, looking forward to what do we need, we've added the key account management, the key account manager position, because those customers really needed that single point of contact that understood their business, that understood the technical issues, that understood electric service, and so on and so forth. In addition, I added another position to the energy conservation and renewables area because I knew that that area was growing. And so in order to serve our customers properly, I felt that needed to be done as well. I had one employee, I saw him the other day, and he said he absolutely loves his new job, and he's doing things that he never dreamed that he could ever do. And that's exactly what you want. You're able to retain good employees, give them opportunities to learn new things, and stay with the company. So I'm proud to have them throughout the company. Another challenge has been collections, and I know you all are aware. When I first came, we had multi-million dollar write-offs every year. And so you get a little bit of a feel for my approach. My first approach was to meet with the experts, which is our team. And we went around and I tried to really understand the issue and how did we get to this position and so on and so forth. And we came up with a very multifaceted approach. We went ahead and we used to send two late notices. Well, in my analysis, 85% of the people waited for the second one, and I said, no, we're not doing that anymore. So we stopped the second notice. We started the automated outbound dialer to make that a notice without cost. We increased the base deposit to actually meet the average of 2 months' bill for a residential customer, and we changed the retention of those bills. We went ahead and educated our customer service representatives. They really did not understand the impact of when they made payment arrangements, and they gave someone an extra 2 weeks to pay $100. Well, then they realized as we went through the discussion that they did that five times a day and that there were all of these people and that we were doing as many as 9,000 payment arrangements a month. So when they understood the impact of that money being out there and being at risk, and when they understood that the customers, some of them were so deep in debt that they could never get out, we were able to change their mindset. They just needed to understand. In addition, we started measuring it. So we set goals on how many payment arrangements had to be kept, because it's the responsibility of the customer to pay, but it's the responsibility of the representative to make sure they understand what they're agreeing to. So the financial results have been very positive, but in addition, we've increased our customer satisfaction even while doing all of this. And so, you know, it kind of gives you an idea of my approach to how you've got an issue, you've got something going on, how I'm going to get it done. So, you identified in your search documents things are changing and what do we need to do in the future and, you know, how do we see our company and so on and so forth. And yes, so with that understanding, we're going to need some new revenue-generating options. And so in May of last year, I actually initiated six teams looking at customer either a service or a product enhancement. And these teams were cross-functional, so we brought in someone from power supply, someone from finance, someone from E&O, key accounts, energy conservation. And they got together and they reviewed six ideas that came from customers. And they're in the process of working through all of those. One was standby generation or backup generation. We had larger customers that have backup generation, but what happens if it doesn't work? Would you be able to help us with that? We have all the nursing homes that need backup generation, and how could we help them with that, and so on and so forth. So we looked at that. We looked at the smart thermostats, and I know you know what we decided to do with those. We looked at outdoor lighting, the commercial customers that actually own their outdoor lighting, and you know we're experts at that. We have all the equipment, so would we maintain those for them, or what would that look like? We've looked at, let's see what else. We're looking at expanding commercial programs for rebates. So, you know, just a plethora of things, and they're starting to bring their results to us, so I don't have all the results yet, but their job was to analyze those things. I think that this is the type of behavior that you're looking for in your next CEO, is someone who's going to initiate and drive some of these things and pull together our expertise and get some things done. So, with that, I'm open to all of your questions.
Well, I'd like to do a follow-up on your introduction, if you don't mind. Okay. Because today we're interviewing all the VPs. Mm-hmm. I would like to know how you feel the VPs would react if you became the CEO, and the vice versa.
Well, we've had conversations amongst ourselves, and the conversations, everyone says that, you know, it will be fine, I can work with you, and so on and so forth. But I realize that there's going to be some disappointment, some concern, some discomfort. I mean, I think that's normal. So my response is basically meeting with them one-on-one. I need to do a deeper dive into their department and their challenges. I know a lot about what they've presented, but I don't have the deep, deep dive. I would never pretend to know their business the way they know they're part of the business. So I think they would be accepting. Same as my approach with everything else, I appreciate their value that they bring to the company. I trust them. We work together on a lot of projects, and we understand that everyone brings something different to the table.
Okay, thank you. And let's start off with Ethel.
Hi, Susan.
Hello.
This goes very much in line with what you just described, but I have to ask it. If you become our general manager, how would you involve your staff in daily operations and assist them to prepare for the next level of responsibility?
Well, back to what I said. You know, we have such a diverse group of talents and skills and experience. I would go to them first. First of all, to find out what do they think we need to be doing? What are their biggest challenges? What are their biggest opportunities from their perspective? Because it's going to be different from power supply than it's going to be from IT, than it's going to be from, you know, human resources or wherever. So, you know, those meetings, those initial meetings to really dig down deep and find out what's going on will probably lead to what we do next.
Very good. Ray.
Okay. If you were selected as the new general manager CEO, how would you analyze the capabilities of the existing executive staff, and what would you go forward with?
Well, I do have some exposure to their capabilities. I mean, obviously, we've had corporate goals, and those goals, I know which departments are actually impacting the achievement of those goals. So I know some of that. But again, I think that working with each one of them individually and coming up with some measurable objectives, I think then I wouldn't need to tell them whether or not they're meeting their goals. They would know. That's basically what I did with all of my employees when I came here. We did not have goals for accuracy in meter reading when I came here. I established goals for all of my positions, and they're measurable, and my employees can tell you how well they're doing. I don't have to tell them. They can tell you, and I think that's kind of the objective. I mean, I think that's what a leader does, but those goals are established together. Because they also know the obstacles and the challenges in achieving those goals. So that's how I would assess their performance.
Kathleen?
Mm-hmm. If we look at KUA as kind of being a hand and the CEO is here, mm-hmm. and all of the vice presidents are extensions from...
A lot of fingers.
A lot of fingers, yeah. So two hands. But if you think about all the different vice presidents, where do you feel your areas of expertise are? What might be weaker areas? Mm-hmm. How have you gained the broad knowledge from the different ones? And have you had oversight duties in other areas besides what we know?
Okay. Well, obviously customer services and customer service at KUA involves a lot of different departments. You know, it's different at every utility. So when I came here, that was the first time I dealt with meter reading and field service and that type of thing. So obviously, customer service, energy conservation, that's the strong part. I would say that over the years, I have spent a lot of time in HR. I have dealt with a lot of, well, as you can see with all the movement in my department and the size, I've dealt with a lot of personnel issues. In fact, at one point in time, they joked about setting up a desk there for me. So I've done a lot with HR. I've also done a lot on the training aspect of HR, so not just performance management. Hiring and firing, I've done a lot of that. And employee development, I'm very, very big on that. So in the HR, I would feel pretty comfortable there. IT, it's a mystery to me why those people like what they do, but I'm so glad that they do. It's constantly changing. I'm fine with all of my devices, and but when I have a problem, I'm so glad they like to troubleshoot it, because I don't like to do that at all. So that's constantly changing, but I partner a lot with IT on the customer service side, and what can we do to serve customers better, and upgrades in our systems, and, you know, the phones, and so on and so forth. So while I don't know the technical part, I certainly understand a lot of the challenges that they have. Legal, I worked with legal quite a bit with mainly human resources issues, but also bankruptcies, and those one-off customer things where they bring us documentation that looks suspect, or they're asking us to do things that are outside of norm that could be borderline legal questions. I do a lot of sanity checks with legal. From engineering operations and power supply, I would say that my biggest, it's mainly from the customer perspective. So if it's outages, or if it's power quality questions, or if it's, you know, a lot of times I've worked with these people for years and years, so when they answer me, I've learned. I don't know their business. I don't know, you know, how to run a power plant, but I've learned an awful lot from them. And I've led a lot of technical people before, and that's why you have them, is because they.
Okay, Manny.
As general manager, what were your first 100 days on the job? What would they look like? What would you do?
Well, you know, one thing obviously is I would need to spend time with each of you, because I would need to find out what it is you're looking for, and how you prefer to communicate. Obviously, I understand Sunshine Law very well, but I know each individually. I've seen some of you ask for paper copies of things. Some of you like it electronically. You know, there are some differences, and I would definitely want to understand that better, so that I knew what you were trying to achieve and how best to communicate with each of you. Obviously, a lot of time with the individual VPs, the direct reports. VPs and the administrative staff. You know, we have a great administrative staff up here, and I would time with them as well. And then the employees. But I think I would do it in that order, because I certainly would want to understand more from the VPs as I did the deeper dive into their organization before I went out and spoke to their employees. Because I want to be sure that we as an executive staff are giving a consistent message. You know, helpful if I understood more their challenges before I went out and spoke with their employees. And then moving ahead on direction. We're already moving on some new products and services and things like that. So I'd like to encourage that to continue.
Okay. You've been... Pardon? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Jose.
Hello, Susan.
Hello.
The mayor's not here.
He is here now.
Susan, please explain your familiarity and your experience with our power supply resources and our relationship with FMPA.
Well, so, you know, obviously I'm well-versed, not as well-versed as Larry, but I am versed on the ARP, All Requirements Project. I understand how we operate the plant, how FMPA pays the cost, with the exception of the VP, his assistant. I understand, I've done some things with FMPA, I know people at FMPA, so I understand the member utilities and the strength in numbers and all of that. So, I don't know what else to say.
Thank you.
Yes. I'm sorry to say. You've been on the job for 3 months and have discovered that some of the long-term employees are passively resistant to your strategic direction and cultural change initiatives. They're talking the talk but not walking the walk. What would you do? What approach would you take? And what are your options?
Well, first of all, I think that a lot of this can be headed off at the beginning when you meet with the individuals and you talk about what's going on in their piece of the business, what are their challenges. And then when you come up with your approach, you know, your strategy, then you know, you expect buy-in. But those conversations should happen before 3 months. And, you know, this has happened before. And you, quite frankly, you... It's all about communication. And you try to understand why they're resistant. And you try to let them understand why you're going down this path. And, you know, you hope it never gets to the point where you have to take action, but I think it's really more communication. You know, change can be very, very difficult, and you need to help people work through it. Everyone handles it a little differently, and you need to help them work through it. They may decide they don't want to be here.
Ethel?
Susan, what is your vision of the future of the energy industry, and how do utilities such as KUA will fit into your vision?
Well, we've all heard, and you're probably going to hear similar things in vision. From a global perspective, I think we're going to have to be more agile. We're going to have to move a little faster. There are a lot of companies that are already in our customers' homes, commercial and residential. You've got AT&T and Google and all these customers. And my vision is I don't want to just be a middleman. So my vision for KUA is that we are bringing value to our customers. I can't tell you exactly what that means 10 years from now. I think that they will tell us what that means. I think that we will have more data to look at after, especially after we get AMI. But I think that we're going to need to bring new products, services, whatever, to our customers. There are things that we do really, really well. One thing that we do really, really well is billing and collections. So we have the opportunity to let customers purchase things through us. And, you know, we do lighting very, very well. We provide electric service very, very well. There are a lot of things that we do very, very well, and I think we need to leverage those. And they may look different in 10 years because, obviously, technology is going to drive a lot of this. Technology and data is going to drive a lot of it. But what I envision is a faster-moving group that is out front.
Okay. Going a little different direction, what additional changes do you anticipate in the electric industry over the next 5 years?
A little different, but somewhat similar. So over the next 5 years, obviously there's the distributed generation, the renewables, the more conservation, solar, I'm sure there are going to be other issues. Power quality is an issue now and will continue to be an issue as technology becomes more and more sensitive. We're experiencing that out at Neo City already. I think that those are the main things. You know, we're going to have to... We have to deal with how our customers are going to use our product differently as well. I think electric vehicles are going to come along further. We don't have to worry about the cold weather problems that they had during the recent polar vortex, and the electric vehicles were losing, I think, 25% of their charge just because of the cold. And those are some of the things that we're looking at to prepare for now. So, for example, electric vehicles in the residential sector, one of the groups is looking at, do we want to start installing those? Do we want to rebate those? What do we want to do with those? One of the main reasons is it's good for us as a company to know where that load is. So if we give them a rebate or something, that is valuable information for us to know as we're sizing transformers or servicing transformers. If we have one subdivision and everyone gets electric vehicles and they're all going to recharge at 6 o'clock at night, you know, that's good information for KUA to know. And so it's that type. There are going to be a lot of changes, a lot of changes, and it's going to move fast.
Okay, would you tell us a little about the staff you manage or have managed, the number of employees, kind of a breakdown of managers, supervisors, professional, clerical, and first-line craft personnel?
Well, as you can see, I've been doing it for 29 years, so all of the above, many and few. So right now I have full-time equivalents of 71. It's actually about 84 employees. I think you're pretty familiar with the mix of them. I do have three managers, executive assistants, and the key account manager reporting directly to me. I have the majority of the rest of them. Some are degreed, some are not. And I have the field force and a very small clerical group. But I told you about earlier, I had 7 directs and 131. The majority of those were all college degree professional people, including engineers, senior engineers, because we handled all of the largest accounts in West Coast of Florida and Central Florida and up through part of the Panhandle. So the University of Florida was our largest customers. And so they even had a cogen plant and so on and so forth. So I had a lot of technical people on my team that helped with those types of issues.
Hey, Manny?
Yeah, I think you cover most of the answer to this question, this next question, but I just want you to elaborate a little bit more on the, if I was to go downstairs and speak to all your subordinates, what would they say about your leadership style and your management style?
Well, I can tell you what they have said. They have said that I am trustworthy, that I do what I say I'm going to do, that I am a good communicator, that I set clear and measurable goals, and that I'm a good listener. I had one say that I actually inspired them to start looking into the future more and become more strategic and more visionary.
Jose?
Okay, Susan. What is your philosophy on energy conservation and efficiency? And can you provide example of programs implemented under your direction that demonstrated the application of your philosophy?
Yes. So everything from I was an energy auditor at one point in time in my career. So I actually had the opportunity to go out and teach energy conservation to customers in their homes and facilities. One of our biggest energy audits was SeaWorld. And we went through that complex and counted everything that used electricity, every calculator, everything. And so I'm a firm believer in teaching people how to use their product properly so that they understand when they get their bill what they're getting for the money and what a value it is. No one really likes to waste anything, and they don't want to waste electricity either. The other thing that I'm very concerned with is that we've got people spending money on things that are not cost effective for them, and the only way that we can help them is to educate them. So it doesn't help to put solar on your home if your air conditioning ducts leak like a sieve and you're, you know, spending all this energy air conditioning your attic. So it's kind of helping them prioritize all that. As far as programs, well, even since I've been at KUA, we used to rebate CFLs, compact fluorescent lights. That technology was already accepted, and so there really was no reason to rebate it anymore. So along came LED lighting. LED lighting was better, so in order to help convince customers to move to the newer technology, we transitioned that program to rebating LED lights. Now, that technology has been widely accepted, so now we are taking those rebate dollars and we are using those for smart thermostats, learning thermostats. So those are some of the programs. When I was at Florida Power Corporation, we actually had an umbrella program for commercial customers, for the large commercial customers. So we had hotels on International Drive that would change out chillers and that type of equipment. And the rebate was based on the KW reduction that was achieved from that energy conservation move. I spent a lot of time in energy conservation, and the investor-owned utilities, while they are required to do it, they spend a lot of money and effort analyzing what's cost-effective. So, for example, if I'm going to rebate you to repair your ductwork because it's going to save 1 kilowatt, then I need to know how much would it cost me to build new generation to generate that 1 kilowatt, and that's how much it's worth for me to give you a rebate. So I don't want to give you more money than that. So that's how they, you know, they determine their rebate amounts. And so we do a lot of research, neighboring utilities, to see what they're doing, the dollar amounts, so that we are in line with an effort in trying to get our customers to understand what they're using and what they're doing.
What examples can you offer as evidence of your successful leadership style and skills?
Well, I've given you a couple of them, you know, in the intro. So I can tell you one more challenge that was not here that may give you an idea. I moved to Ocala. We were restructuring again. And I was responsible for Ocala up into the panhandle over to Mexico Beach. And I was, I had to design an organization from scratch. I didn't know the territory. I didn't know the customers. I didn't know the existing employees. So my leadership approach was the same as what I've explained before. I went around and started talking to people. I spoke to all the employees. I met a bunch of customers. I spoke to local government officials to try to find out about their communities and understand and analyze data. I mean, I looked at where are the customers located, what size are they, what type of needs do they have, how technical of a person would I need over in Mexico Beach or, you know, in order to serve those customers. And I designed the entire organization. I also handled all of the employee selection and how do I know it was successful? Well, we achieved every goal. The customers were happy. Satisfaction was high. Sales goals were achieved. Employee satisfaction was achieved. I had the highest employee satisfaction for any group over 100. And so that's another example that's.
Thank you very much. Ethel?
Tell us about a responsibility in your current or previous job that you enjoyed and one that you enjoyed the least.
Okay. A specific responsibility, probably, I mean, my ultimate goal is to contribute to the success of the company, but the specific responsibility is employee development. That is probably what I enjoy the most. I love learning personally. And I love sharing information and sharing knowledge and watching people grow and succeed, because as they succeed, the whole organization succeeds. What do I like the least? You know, it's always difficult to let people go. They often choose to let themselves go. Actually, they always choose to let themselves go. But that is probably the least. I've done it, and you know, you need to do what you need to do. But that is probably my least favorable responsibility.
Right. Ray. Okay. How would you plan to ensure KUA's sustainability through succession planning?
Well, it's right up my alley with the employee development, and I hate to keep repeating myself. But I do think that as a leader, it is your one of your primary responsibilities to develop everyone else. So I've been part of succession planning. I was identified as a key person for moving through the organization at Fluid Power Corporation, I think 4 years after I'd been there. So I've been on the receiving end of getting a mentor and being brought along and taught things, and I've been on the giving end of teaching people and bringing them along and giving them opportunities to succeed. I think it's important to have a plan. You never know who's going to win the lottery next. You need to, in the interest of everyone and the company and the customers, you need to be planning for that. You need to identify people. You need to talk to them individually. What do you want to do? How do you want to get there? This is what I think you need to do to get there. And let's make sure that you've got everything you need to be a strong candidate.
I have a follow-up. With the succession program that is here at KUA mm-hmm. today, what changes would you make?
I believe that I would probably talk about it more. I feel like it's a, and it doesn't need to be, because everyone that's here should be here and invested in the success of this company, and it's just part of the success of this company. And I think that it needs to be there's a lot of history that's kept that I'm not sure is important. So we fill out a form every year, and it says, how were they 7 years ago versus how are they now? I'm really more interested in how they are now. So I'm not sure that I would hang on to the old. And I think that what I do like about the process that we have right now is that it reminds everyone to have those conversations. What do you want to do next? Do you have any interest in becoming a manager? What do you think you need to work on? Here's what I think you need to work on. Here are your strengths and so on. So I think I'd make it more visible, and I'm not sure I would go as far back in history to, I don't think it really matters, 7 years ago where they were.
Mm-hmm. If you're selected as general manager, what would KUA look like 10 years from now under your leadership?
Well, to the community, I love public power, but to the community, I think we would look a lot the same, very involved, very supportive, active, visible. I think we would look the same to the community. The company as a whole, obviously, I think all of us are going to need to continue to retool and learn new things with new technology and everything. I think we're all going to be different. We're going to have new skills. So that will be different. I don't know. Sometimes with technology, it means less people. Sometimes with technology, it means the same amount. But I also think we're going to have more products and services, and I really envision us having a sales and marketing piece added to our organization, probably in the customer service area, where we're doing focus groups with customers, and we're asking, what is it you want, and then taking those ideas and doing the total analysis to determine the feasibility and if it's a good decision. I still see us as being financially solid.
Annie?
Will you have a problem with individual board members approaching either your staff, the VPs, or someone in the company, or vice versa?
Not at all. I would ask that people would let me know the results, because I may have some additional information or resources and I might be able to help, or it may give me some ideas of some new things to do. But how that happens wouldn't be forced. It would be a request. But no, I don't have any problem with that at all. We're all in it for the same reason.
Okay.
All right, Susan. As you know, this board is chosen by the city commissioner and its mayor. And this board, really the only one that works for them here is the CEO of this company. And I hope that they will always remember that and never micromanage their employees. So having that in mind, please tell us about your experience working with a governing body such as our board of directors.
Okay. Well, so obviously, I've worked with this board. I am currently on the APPA Retirement Planning Advisory Committee. I am also on the KUA Pension Board, KUA Defined Contribution Board. I've been on the board for the Boys and Girls Club of Central Florida. The governing board, the Ocala board, is actually a fundraising board. But when you're chairman of the Ocala board, or Ocala, Osceola County, when you're chairman of the Osceola, it's the O's. When you're chairman of the Osceola County board, you are also a member of the Central Florida board, which is the governing board. So I've been part of that board for 6 years because I was chairman of the Osceola County board for 6 years.
I have a follow-up on that question.
What, Osceola versus Ocala?
Let's turn the horse around. Do you know the difference with
you? I'm going to leave that one alone.
Yes, I know.
Just as a follow-up, also, what is your experience working with elected officials such as federal and state legislatures, federal and state administrations, and local governing bodies?
Not as much. Most of our first of all, I haven't been given the opportunity to do any of that. Most of that has been assigned outside of in the community where I meet with people. At Florida Power Corporation and Progress Energy, which is now Duke, which is, anyway, all of that, it was all of that was done up in Tallahassee, and it was assigned to our regulatory department. I have high regard and respect for people having specific roles. Prime example is Chris Gent being the voice of KUA for during outages and things like that, or at least making sure messages are consistent. So I tread very lightly in those areas because I want to be sure that messages. I have gone to the legislative rally that I initiated on my own. I had to ask for permission to go to that. So outside of that and APPA.
All right. Susan, would you describe a specific difficult personnel issue that you addressed and as harassment, discrimination, or other improper activity? What you did, the outcome, and what you learned from it?
Out of respect for employees at KUA, I'm going to go to one that occurred at a previous job. So as I went to North Florida to design this new organization, and as I spoke to all of the employees and so on and so forth, and being the first female leader up there, I was informed that one of the managers had made numerous inappropriate comments for years and years. So my approach, similar to everything else, was I went around and started talking to people. I was very disappointed to learn as I went from person to person to person that it had happened and people had said something and that nothing had been done. I reviewed all of the performance reviews. Nothing was ever written down. This person walked on water. And so, to my dismay, this continued. So I went ahead and confronted the person. They admitted to doing it. They said they had been told to stop, and they continued. The ultimate result was that they were, when I redesigned the new organization, they were not part of it. What did I learn? Same thing that we learned from all of these, you know. People make mistakes, but they need to be held accountable. And those that are supposed to be holding people accountable need to be held accountable.
Hey, Ethel?
This is a follow-up question, Susan. If you are promoted to being the EO for this company, will you bring someone from the outside to replace you, or will you use people from within your employees?
Well, I think it's always good, even similar to this process, to bring in external candidates as well. It certainly gives you a benchmark to make sure that you are doing what's best for the company, which is the ultimate goal. So I would interview from internal and external, but I do know that I have some internal candidates that would be very good candidates.
Ray.
Okay. What are your career objectives, and how does becoming our president and general manager fulfill those objectives?
My number one objective, and what gets me going every day, is to make sure that I'm contributing to success. And so this just gives me a different level of platform in which I can do that. That's pretty much it.
Kathleen, you have a question? So we've actually run out of questions, I think.
I told you, brevity is the key to success.
Has everybody had their chance to answer?
Or do we have any follow-ups? I guess we could.
Or is there a follow-up to some of the previous questions? If not, then Susan, would you like to wrap up the interview process?
By asking you a few questions?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Uh-oh. Okay. So my first one is, what are your top three action items for the new CEO during the first 6 months?
Yeah, I'll tell you what it is. First of all, number one is to get the team together and to slowly but surely decide if the team you have is what you need or if it's not, to meaningfully change. Mm-hmm. Number two is to work with the board, get to know the board, have meetings with the boards individually so that you know what we want, what we're looking for individually, and how we, I think you address this, how we want to get our information, which I think is extremely important. Three would be to set a plan for the next 10 years and let us know what it is as we grow. Anybody else want to?
And I would kind of say strategic planning is in there somewhere, mm-hmm. that out of this evaluation process, we come up with a strategic plan that reflects our new manager, mm-hmm. And their assessment of the organization in the future. I think another thing that really needs to be looked at is succession planning, and I know that's kind of your thing a lot of times, but to be sure that everybody has an equal opportunity to gain knowledge and move forward in the company.
To add to that, every single one of the people being interviewed have an idea of new services that can be provided. So to me, one of the priorities would be to sit around with the VPs and really look at all this list and prioritize it so that we can really go in and attack the market, knowing that everyone has buy-in and everybody is going to have their energy and effort into those priorities, and that we look and go forward successfully and implement them.
Manny?
Yeah, round it off. I got my three would be the future.
Future. Write that down.
The new CEO coming in. What personally I would like to see is that strategic planning first needs to be done between the new CEO and their VPs. And to bring to this board, what is the future of KUA from now on? Where is it that we're going? We got here and we're successful. This new CEO is to take us into the future and to bring those ideas forward. Not only the ideas, it's always good to bring ideas. I like to see how you're going to implement them and make them into action. Action plans speak for themselves. And that's what I like to see out of the new CEO that comes in and work.
Anything else, Ray? And
again, to follow along with what Manny, he did it briefly, is called future. But some of the things, and I'm the newest kid on the block here, so I've learned a lot over the past years. And one of the things that I've heard pretty much consistently is that the current electric utilities are going to have to find additional revenue streams to be able to keep up and to be sustainable. Well, how are you going to do that? And what might those be? And again, I totally agree with the succession planning. That's something that, you know, has to be done company-wide, not just at the top level, but, you know, giving people more opportunities like you've suggested doing. And I think just making sure that KUA continues to be one of the most respected electric companies here in Florida and maybe nationally.
Anything else?
Do I have time for one more?
You certainly, well, more questions.
She's enjoying this way too much.
We're not
She's enjoying this way too much.
No, I have one more question. And that is, how would you measure my success and what could I do to exceed your expectations?
That was one of the questions we had to ask, how might you be evaluated? And that's certainly something we've got to put some time and effort and get some expertise on how to evaluate a CEO, because I sure don't think we've got it down pat now.
Well, I think we set standards, we set goals, and we measure if we've got those goals. I mean, that's cut and dry. Mm-hmm. If we set goals out for the CEO, we want to measure that those goals have been achieved.
Okay.
And maybe a more, because we need the information to know how to set the goals. Because mm-hmm. we are just public people. We're not energy people. We're not utility people. We're here on the board to, because we're not, actually.
You're our customers.
We're our customers, exactly. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we need information from the CEO and that team to help us set a direction. But after the direction is set, I think results are extremely important, and to measure those.
Okay.
And not just 1 to 10. I think measurements can be done in words more than numbers.
And along the same line, there's got to be a two-fold. There are results that are driven by the staff. Mm-hmm. And they should be measured differently than the results that are driven by the actual leader and what his performance has allowed the staff to do versus the staff not having been able to do it because of lack of leadership. And so defining that difference, which is subtle but is there, has to be our accomplishment for this year, upcoming year, and for the new CEO.
You know, Susan, in the city of Kissimmee, we have great standards. Every year, we evaluate our city manager. So every beginning of the year, the city commission has a retreat. And out of that retreat, we assign the goals from the city commission. and we give that task to the city manager. So at the end of the year, when we evaluate the city manager, it depends, the evaluation will depend on what he has done with the goals that we have set in front of him. That's the path. Our city manager, once we create the goals, it gets put on the walls. And we hold them up to it. We hold them accountable to it. This is the direction that the commission gave. This is what we want to accomplish. And so that's an evaluation. But it has to be an evaluation not of his directors of his department, in this case here, the VPs. No, no, this is the responsibility of the CEO or the city manager to get those goals accomplished. And that should be an evaluation, and that's what's done every year in the city of Kissimmee. We evaluate and renew his contract every single year. And that's the way that I would like to see here in KUA, the same procedure done, where we evaluate and we renew a contract depends on what the work that he has done, he or she has done.
Thank you for adding Angie.
The person.
Yeah.
Now, you've asked us questions, and I want to have you finish up and tell us why you think you should be the new CEO.
Yeah, come on.
Well, I really just think that
excuse me. You may not be able to do that.
Yes, ma'am.
As a follow-up.
As a follow-up question.
Oh,
thank you. One of the questions I answered, probably 25, number 25. Mm-hmm. Would you please tell us why you should be CEO?
I really think, as I said at the very beginning, that this is a leadership position. And I think that I bring such a diverse and extensive leadership experience, successful leadership experience background, that would be so valuable. And I have experience in sales and marketing and products and conservation and renewables, not as much in renewables, but a lot in conservation. And that's where we see the future, and that's what I bring.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I will.
Oh, yeah, I like that idea about the retreat. Maybe we could go to Key West for
Yay!
Oh, no, the lawyer has to be here.
Can we go to Key West?
Thanks.
That'll be interesting.
Are we adjourned?
We are adjourned.
We're a bunch
we
of
We will
germs.
Come back at, is it 1 o'clock?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock for the next session.